Okay, it's a very topical subject. We're going to speak to Stuart Bloom. He's the Emeritus Professor of Science and Technology Studies at the University of Amsterdam, educated at Oxford University. He has previously worked at the University of Sussex, the London School of Economics, and in Whitehall. And we welcome him to the show. Good afternoon, Stuart. How are you?
Yeah, pretty good. Thank you, Dave. Yeah, happy good, to be good. Have the chance to talk to you.
Lovely. And it's come at a very topical time for me because I'm having my vaccine tomorrow, my first jab here in Spain, at 8:45 in the morning. So if you want to know any more information, I'll let you know how I feel tomorrow afternoon.
Absolutely.
Now, did you decide to write this book before COVID-19 arrived on the scene, or was this already in process?
No, that's the funny thing. I mean, it was the first edition was published in 2017.
Yeah.
And it starts with a discussion of a movie called Contagion, which has been quite a lot referred to recently because it sets out a scenario just like what we've had. No, it came out of the work that I had been doing up till then, and I had no idea it would become such a topical subject or that it would totally colonize my activities.
Now, I was hearing recently about vaccine anti-vaxxers, for want of a better term, in Leicester, decades and decades ago, protesting. And yet, when I was a child, I was born in 1976. When I was a child, I don't think my parents thought twice about vaccination or the vaccines that were offered. So is it a relatively new thing, the controversy around vaccines?
Yes and no. Even that's a point of discussion.
Yes.
I mean, there was a controversy, like when the very first vaccine was introduced against smallpox in the 19th century. But then, like as more vaccines became available, as people began to trust them, by the 1940s, 1950s, the controversy had gone away.
Yeah.
And then it blew up again with renewed vigor around... Yeah, just after you, like around 1980, I'd say.
Yeah.
And then you see all kinds of new groups being established protesting against vaccination. So, is that old, new? It's like what we see now has roots going back, let's say, to the 1980s.
And yet, have you been surprised, Professor, at the uptake in the UK and also here in Spain? It's been relatively high.
Yeah, because people are scared. It'll be interesting to see when some other vaccine comes along, whether it's sustained. I don't think it will be. People are scared, and with reason. Most people see the need for this vaccine, but they're not all the same. I mean, the rate of vaccination with standard pediatric vaccines for kids, that's been going down.
Yeah.
This is what we're in now is an unusual situation.
Do you think that's almost, without trying to go too conspiratorial here, the government have virtually admitted that we've scared people into doing what we need them to do? That's been pretty obvious. What's your take on that? Do you think that's necessarily a good thing that people have felt worried to go and get the vaccine? And as you say, that could not bode well for the future.
Well, you know, that's another big discussion point. Like some countries in and out of Europe have made some vaccines obligatory.
Yeah.
And in some cases, like in some parts of the US, your children can't go to school unless they're vaccinated. In Australia, I think child welfare benefits are connected to proof of vaccination. But whether it's right to force people, I mean, what concerns me, apart from the morality of... I think we ought to be able to convince people in that's their interest. What worries me is that if you put pressure on them, it's likely that the kind of miseries, the dissatisfactions, the anxieties that led them to be reluctant will burst out in some other way.
Yeah.
It's no accident. There's been a kind of correlation between resisting vaccination and far-right politics.
Yes. Okay. And you talk in your book about how we've become more globalized, obviously with the internet, but also with our healthcare, that generally people don't seem as satisfied with the healthcare they're receiving. And I wasn't sure whether that's more of an American perspective or generally around the world.
Well, I think there's two things. People are less trusting.
Yeah.
I mean, it used to be that vaccines were made by local companies or local government institutions, and now you don't know where they're coming from. But it's also true that people are less satisfied because of austerity and the cuts that have been made in kind of basic health services.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there anything about the current set of vaccines that worry you, Stuart?
The current set of vaccines?
Yeah, over the COVID-19, yeah.
The COVID-19 vaccine.
Yes.
Yes. What worries me is how it's being turned into. It's more about politics now than it is about health.
Yeah.
That's what worries me. It's no accident. People are saying it's like the space race in the 1960s. It's like, you know, global players are trying to convince the world that their vaccines are the best. They're trying to undermine the credibility and the working of other people's vaccines. It's become too politicized. That's what worries me. I think the vaccines are mostly pretty good.
There are those, obviously, and I think the speed of the vaccine coming out and the way in which they kind of process the testing, the vast testing of people over a quicker period of time. There was talk earlier on last year that people maybe expectation management from government saying we won't expect to see a vaccine for a couple of years, and yet here we are, you know, with half of the population vaccinated already a year and a half later. Is there anything for us to worry about when it comes to the speed of the release of the vaccine?
Well, I think it's been a remarkable scientific achievement, that's for sure. There were certainly worries about cutting corners in testing it on particular groups. And now I think about it, something else that worries me is the lack of clarity in the deals that governments did with vaccine manufacturers. Mm-hmm. Like, if something goes wrong, if a particular group of people get really serious side effects, who's responsible? Actually, I wrote a year ago saying this ought to be clear. People ought to be told who's bearing the responsibility if anything happens to them.
Yeah.
But so that's the spade in itself. No, but it probably is true that there are groups that, well, we've discovered on which it was not tested sufficiently.
I mean, we're seeing here, of course, I know the government kind of went back on this a little bit in the UK, but vaccine passports, it's almost. There are people who have genuine concerns and are not having the vaccine, and it's almost discriminatory against them to say, well, because you're not having the vaccine, you're not going to have a passport, you're not going to be able to travel to the same degree somebody else is going to. I mean, there's a lot of politics in all of this.
There is. And of course, on that particular point, my self-interest conflicts with my role as a social scientist, because I want to travel and I'm happy that I've been vaccinated.
Yeah, there is that conflict there, isn't there? Yeah.
But I think there have to be other ways of, I mean, like, well, I think there will be if you have to show a negative test to travel. I mean, there have to be ways of kind of making travel possible for, in some way, for people who haven't been vaccinated either, because, I mean, that's another thing. There are a whole pile of issues that haven't really been, like vaccinating refugees.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, people are saying, you know, you can't come into the UK unless you quarantine or have a test. And people are turning up at Dover. And that's causing problems as well. It's a fascinating topic. And I know your book as well, you look at how governments really ought to improve when it comes to vaccinations. Immunisation exposes the limits of public health authorities while suggesting how they can restore our confidence. What do governments need to do to restore our confidence in the health service? It's a big one, isn't it?
That's a big question. Yeah. I think more transparency is needed. I mean, it used to be the case that when people were thinking about introducing a new vaccine and offering it to kids or adolescents, that there would be a kind of broad discussion to make sure that that people wouldn't reject it, and therefore you'd be undermining faith in the vaccination system as a whole. There was much greater care.
Yeah.
And in that sense, of course, the COVID situation is unusual because it was so urgent and so desperate. But I think there should be more transparency about deals, about side effects, about why a new vaccine seems to be called for, making sure that people actually are willing to take it.
What about, obviously, when you do have information coming out over the internet, and we were talking about links, of course, before the coronavirus came on the scene for us all, we were talking about links for children and danger for children when it comes to all kinds of different things and going around the internet. What about the responsibility of governments to say, actually, you know, to debunk some of the theories that are out there? And bring that information.
Yeah. Well, there's certainly a lot of... I mean, I always think the internet is like a giant flea market. I mean, there's everything there, and you don't know whether you're getting a bargain or a pig in the poke. So it's full of misinformation, there's no doubt about it. But the good thing is that parents don't rely really on the internet for their information. They might pick something up there, but then they'll go and discuss it either with friends or with family or with their general practitioner. So I think the influence of the internet is a bit overestimated, but it is full of a lot of absolute garbage, there's no doubt.
I think the biggest problem for a lot of us, and your book's really great for this, and Stuart, you're a professor, a very intelligent person, worked at some great universities. And, you know, we as lay people hear on the news scientists disagreeing with each other. You know, the Great Barrington Declaration, some great names on there of scientists, you know, that have got great reputations, disagreeing with other scientists who've got great reputations. And that's always going to be the case. There's going to be scientists who see things differently.
Yeah, because apart from what they do in their laboratories, they're people like the rest of us. And another thing is that different bits of medical science have a different take on things. So, and there is a tendency for, let's say, virologists who know all about viruses to start pontificating about human behavior, about which they don't know very much. That's part of the problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
The kind of expertise is kind of taken to be too wide, I mean, to be too generalized.
Yeah, and that's where the governments have to have a very good balance of experts, don't they, I suppose? You know,
exactly.
Psychologists as well on there. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
How much does vaccines... one of the things I saw you talking on Russia Today, I think it was, a while ago, saying that... the expectation that we're going to get rid of COVID-19, coronavirus, really is the wrong expectation, because we've only ever really got rid of one disease in our history, and most of them are still with us.
That's right. I mean, they've been trying to eradicate the poliovirus for 40 years. I don't know how many billions of euros or pounds or dollars have gone into it. And they're always kind of within sight, but they never get there. And it diverts resources from the kind of basic healthcare that everybody needs. What really worries me is that somebody will say, we must set about eradicating the virus. And with a virus that lives in animals like this one, it's pretty impossible. Yeah. The smallpox virus didn't live in monkeys and bats, and this thing does.
Yeah, it almost feels like we've got to learn to live with it somehow. And do you have much hope going forward? You know, the vaccine rollout in the UK has been phenomenal. It's starting to pick up pace here in mainland Europe as well. Where do you see us going in the next 3 to 6 months? Or is that an impossible one?
On vacation, I hope.
You can come down here, Professor, and join us.
No, because apart from the vaccination, I mean, the therapies for anybody who does get sick are vastly improved.
Yes, yes.
So I'm not really worried about the next 3 to 6 months. It's going to get better. What worries me is, like, 3 years from now, there will be another virus like this. That's almost certain.
Until
we stop chopping down forests and displacing animals.
That's a sobering thought to finish on. It really is.
I prefer to hold on to the idea of going on vacation.
Yes. I tell you what, let's just go away for 3 years somewhere, I think.
good idea.
Professor Stuart Bloom, thank you for joining us here on Talk Radio Europe in Spain, and hoping that you stay safe where you are and many more years of writing. The book's called Immunization, How Vaccines Become Controversial. And thank you for joining us and your time this afternoon with us here in Spain. Hopefully we'll see you here soon.
Thanks very much, David. It was a pleasure.
Take care, Stuart. Thank you. Bye-bye.